Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is Constance Hine, and you join Coaching Connections. And I'm the author of Coaching for Success and with Horizons in Learning. And I've been working in the early childhood field for over 30 years. In the last 20 years, I've had the pleasure of working with many programs across the country and have met many people who are contributing so much to deepening and broadening our coaching practices and policies in our field. My passion is to create interactive coaching learning communities where people can cross-pollinate their ideas, experiences, successes, and challenges. And this show is a forum for these leading thinkers and practitioners in the field to do just that. So welcome to Coaching Connections. Today we have the pleasure of having Gretchen Ames and Barbara Blender of Gateway to Quality with us. And they're with a quality improvement initiative that provides external assessment and coaching services for licensed childcare facilities in San Francisco. Gretchen is currently the program director at Gateway to Quality, and she's had many experiences in early childhood, including teaching, directing, administrative positions, and is currently pursuing a doctoral degree in educational leadership from Mills College. Welcome, Gretchen.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Barbara Blender works closely with Gretchen, and she's the program manager. She provides a lot of the supervision, support, and the performance feedback and evaluations of their team of seven assessors and coaches. And this includes developing and refining the coaching methodologies, evaluating the effectiveness of coaching, and supporting their staff development, as well as working closely with Gretchen in their community early childhood efforts in San Francisco. Welcome, Barbara.
Hi, thanks for having us.
My pleasure to have you both. You know, I'm so glad to have you join us today. I've known you both for, I think, about 5 years, and I've been so impressed by your intentional and thoughtful coaching program and your team of coaches and how both of you have approached this endeavor. And I think our listeners will find great value in, you know, just having you share your journey these last 5 years and your lessons learned, some of the barriers and challenges you've faced, and your successes in working in your community to foster the quality and early childhood programs we're all wanting to achieve. And I'm wondering if one of you would begin by describing and giving us some context for your quality improvement program, Gateway to Quality, so we have a bit of a context to understand what you're doing in your community.
Sure. Well, as you know, Gateway to Quality began as an assessment initiative in San Francisco. It really began, I think, in earnest in about 2004. And for many years, we were the team of people who provided the ITERS, ECHRS, and FEDCRS assessments. We use a high inter-rater reliability standard, and that was sort of where we came from. But many years into the work, we had a couple different issues that emerged. One, the field of early childhood, the teachers and family and child care providers we were assessing really wanted some support, and it wasn't enough to just assess them, but to they wanted to know how to make changes and support and to improve the quality of their programs. And at the same time, the assessment model the way the work was structured was a sort of part-time hourly work model, and it wasn't working for the assessors, and that was really challenging. So that just happened to be sort of the context when one of our major city funders was interested in funding coaching as an initiative. So we really took on the notion of coaching and sort of took it very seriously to try to help really bolster quality in the city. So that was where sort of we came from initially. But our coaching program, as you know, because we've worked so closely together in this sort of intervening years, but we have been doing coaching for 4.5 years now, and we provide about 3,000 hours of coaching each year for licensed programs. And we typically touch anywhere between 30 and 50 sites per year. So that's sort of the broad stroke of where we want, you know, where we've come from. Do you want us to sort of share model details now, or would you like to sort of let that emerge as we talk?
Yeah, I think a little bit. And one thing is, how do the programs qualify for you delivering services? Because one thing that's probably important to, for our listeners to understand is you are an external community base. You're going into other programs.
Yes, yeah, so we're
so
contacted.
How does that work?
So a lot of times our the programs now, our program has sort of evolved a little bit over the past several years, but where we stand right now is that programs that are participating in any one of our many city funding initiatives, they have to be participating in city funding to be eligible to work with us. But that means typically programs are serving low-income families, usually a very high percentage of low-income families. We have our own sort of internal prioritization, so if there's a high demand, we really look at, we want to make sure that we're serving programs that serve infants and toddlers and programs that have low language and interaction scores on the ITERS, ECRS, or FEDCRS to prioritize those sites first. We also have, so there are a couple different city funding initiatives that sort of require scores. And so all of the programs we've worked with have been assessed by us.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what more would you want to say about just the functioning of your program again so the listeners have some of the context of what your, you know, how you work with programs and what your coaches are facing being out in the field?
Do you want to know our process? Like once
sure.
we're, you know, once we're thinking about or a site has come to us asking for coaching, do you want to kind of hear the process of that?
That would be great.
Okay. So as Gretchen spoke about, you know, there are a lot of sites that are either needing to go through coaching process because they want much more long-term change and they really want to grow as a holistic program. So when either a funder is asking us if we could support a site or a site is coming to us asking for support, we typically first sit down with them and do an intake. So we have a pretty, over the time, developed a strong intake process, which includes a lot of the administrative components of a site to see how ready they are for taking on coaching because it's a very big commitment. We're not looking for a short-term quick fix. Intervention, we plan to be at a site anywhere from 1 to 3 years. So we really like to up front make it really clear, you know, the requirements of coaching as well as the site readiness. So we have an intake process that we go through with the site supervisor, with the director, first to determine the readiness, and then we also do the same for the coachees. And we try to determine, you know, their beliefs, their values, what they want out of coaching, what they're looking for, because we really want to come at coaching from the coachee's perspective, knowing that, you know, change will happen more readily if the coachee has ownership over it and feels empowered versus being told what to do. So we go through, you know, the phase one is kind of intake application readiness screening, and then we set up an orientation time with our coaches where we sit down and we really discuss with the coaches what, you know, what's going to happen, what they're looking for. We do questionnaires where we can get their feedback as well as sit down and do one-on-ones with them to really hear from them and give them a voice in this process. And that is the beginning of the building of the relationship, actually. And then at the next phase is, you know, contract signing. And that's kind of the nuts and bolts of here's our expectation of our coaches, here's our expectations of the coachees, here's our expectations of the director and site supervisor, here's, you know, our expectation of the supervisor of the coachees. And, you know, we're going to meet quarterly to have sit-downs. We're going to have, you know, every other week sessions or weekly sessions. It depends on the need and the willingness of the site. So that's just kind of, you know, the logistics of it. And then the next phase, we call, is really the formal coaching process. So this is where, you know, the agreements have been set, the days and times and hours, what's going to be worked on first, which is chosen by the coachee. And, you know, we usually try to do a pre-assessment. So it could be that they've already had a harm scale assessment. We might do a class assessment. We might do a PAS or a BAS. We might just do an observation based on what the coachee has asked us to pay attention to. So we get some pre-assessment information so that we can work off of something measurable in some way and then be able to, you know, measure effectiveness throughout. We have, you know, throughout the coaching process, we use different methods such as observation and feedback, modeling, one-on-one with one coachee at a time, as well as team coaching. We visit other programs. We use videotaping. We put on the TA and training hat as well, you know, throughout the coaching relationship. I mean, coaching is our you know, it's a whole toolkit of strategies that we use. So we have the coaching sessions, which are really frequent and consistent, and the relationship building, again, is the key. And then, you know, the last phase, which is not really last because we kind of do a cycle of inquiry throughout all the coaching, throughout the years of coaching. You know, we're not just working on one thing. One thing leads to another thing, which leads to another thing. It's kind of loops around. We do post-assessment. So if we were measuring something specific, we will then measure it later and do some comparisons, again, being very strength-based. We come at coaching from a strength-based philosophy. We are not here to be punitive with coachees.
Right.
That's a little summary. Hopefully that wasn't
well,
too...
Well, thank you. That was very clear, and I know, because I know your program a little bit, I know there were some lessons learned that you had about this, what you call readiness of the programs. And so could you talk about over the years what you, some of the lessons learned about identifying and engaging in the phase one of the intake process with determining the readiness of the, you know, the program itself, the administrative and then the coachee readiness?
That's actually been sort of a complex terrain for us to navigate because we've had a lot of programs sort of coming into our coaching through different ways and for different reasons. And so there have been times when programs didn't feel like it was really a choice to participate and other times when they did feel like it was a choice. So that makes it a little bit more complicated. We find that by staying really focused on relationship building and, you know, really making sure there's a good match both linguistically, culturally, with the program, with the coachees and with the coaches, is really central in that the relationship, that relationship is key, even when teachers or family child care providers are feeling resistant. It's been sort of challenging, but this, so ask.
And along with that being said, we have found that some of the lessons learned are, you know, for a successful coaching program will require some infrastructure, some supervision, coordination of services, even time and space for coaches to meet, because sometimes we've been asked to go to the coffee shop down the street, which can work and it cannot work. So we've definitely found that some of those just basic components, such as is there planning time? Is there, you know, is it going to happen consistently that we're going to meet with coaches is important, as well as the teacher and the coachees and administrators' engagement. So really there needs to be some willingness on all sides to engage in this process. And I think once the coachees realize that this is not a punitive process, but it's a strength-based supportive process that builds already on what they're doing well and where they want to grow for their, you know, for their own professional development on behalf of their children and families, I think it really shifts their thinking and enthusiasm, and the buy-in becomes much stronger pretty quickly than if we're just coming in to do some quick TA.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we encountered, too, that we sort of didn't really expect in the same way when we initiated coaching, is that a lot of teachers already have this, you're just another expert coming in to tell me what to do mindset. And part, you know, our approach with partnering with teachers and helping them grow on what they're interested in building and not sort of coming and saying, well, you just don't know how to do this or this yet, and I'm going to teach you. It's almost disarming and a little confusing because it's an unfamiliar model. Most people we've worked with, they're accustomed to having experts come in and tell them what to do differently, which we find it's a little problematic in our field, since we want the field to have an inquiry stance. We want to help grow early childhood educators to be professionals in the field, and to do that, that involves pulling on best practices. A stance of inquiry is what we know is the best sort of teaching tool. Like, that's what makes a good teacher, and that's what makes good outcomes for kids, is teachers who have an inquiry approach and who are thoughtful and reflective about what they do and why they do it. That's what we're trying to cultivate in the long run.
And that's a challenging process. You know, a lot of the times, as you said, the people that we're coaching, shifting the power to them is a little shocking to them, I think.
Not only is it shocking, you know, I completely agree, Constance. And the issue, too, is that sort of thinking about it in the larger context, I mean, our entire education system is set up to teach people, you know, what learning is about, you know, learning dates and numbers and spitting them back on a test. You're either right or you're wrong. You know, so our entire education system isn't set up to have this reflective inquiry stance. So it's an unfamiliar mental model. And that, to me, seems to be some of the central crux of our field, and part of the concerns of a lot of other professional development initiatives, is that they perpetuate that sort of banking model of education, where the teacher is the expert and they deposit information to be withdrawn from a child at a later date. And we're trying to sort of cultivate a different way of thinking. And it's very hard. That's what we want teachers to do with young kids. We want them to engage with children. We want them to ask the children questions, draw on their funds of knowledge. So to do that, for them to do that, they need to know what that feels like for themselves.
And so we're trying
to create a context for them to have the space to do that, to learn that they do have information, they do have knowledge. You know, we all can learn and grow, but to make them curious and want to inquire and engage in their own practice.
Yeah, and Gretchen, I think that what you mentioned, this reflective inquiry mental model, really is part of the crux where I see the approach of using coaching and professional development allows us to actually, we're introducing, I think, for the first time, a systematizing walking our talk. Because so very often we use a very direct instruction with professionals in our field and then expect them to be reflective with children.
Exactly.
So, you know, you and I have had some good conversations about this walking the talk. And, you know, when you are with a coach, with a coachee and a teacher, it's one thing. But then how do we loop in the administrators, the directors, who you might be not directly coaching, to get this same, you know, flavor of how we impart and expand this inquiry model? And also in that question is, are you directly coaching the directors as well?
Okay. Well, one of the lessons learned that we discovered in our first few years of coaching, when we did more spotty coaching, one coachee here, in this classroom, another classroom, we learned that that was not effective, and we really needed a more holistic approach, which included the administration. So Gateway teamed up with another local initiative here and created an administrator's academy, which brings in various administrators. Most of them we already have coaching relationships with, or we're embarking on a coaching relationship with at their site. So to answer your question, it is our goal and hope to always include the administration. I'm not going to say it happens all the time in terms of one-on-one coaching, but it's happening a lot more than it was. And we see that feedback loop as being critical, because we really know it's a systematic issue. It is not just fix the teachers in the classroom or fix the family child care provider who's, you know, there all day on her own. So we know that it really requires a much more holistic approach. So yes, we, as much as possible, involve the administrators. If the administrator is not in the administrator's academy with us, then we still do have communication with that director or site supervisor fairly regularly, but it's not the same. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So in San Francisco, you have the unique, you know, community support for this whole administrator's academy,
mm-hmm.
where I think it's Sheila Norman is offering technical assistance and training to directors and administrators. Is that correct?
And mentoring, yes.
And I would say
just for any listeners who are embarking on coaching, I think when we first began, there's a really high focus, and a lot of it is because of the sort of assessment systems, and I know that this is an issue nationally with quality rating improvement systems, where everybody, you know, is really focused on scores on either CLASP or harm scale ERS tools. Those only really measure a part of what we want the field to sort of embody, and they're a really narrow snapshot, and to focus exclusively on those is problematic. I think remembering, just for a very concrete example, there are a lot of teachers who don't have paid planning time, and so it's very challenging for them to be able to plan with their other teachers and sort of work on their curriculum and be engaged in that in a thoughtful way when they never have time in their schedule to do it. So unless you're working with the supervisors and the administrators to help that structure change so that they can have paid planning time, it's really hard for them to implement and make a lot of the changes that they're interested in doing. So it needs to be a both-and approach. I would say to anybody starting up coaching out there, definitely keep the administration as very central to the work. It's not. I think that one of the things, if we could go back in time and do it differently, we would have started with the administrators first and then work into classrooms as opposed to the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part of that, too, is that the program really, one of the key components, and a lot of our colleagues in Alameda County have done a lot of thinking and writing about this, but first of all, quality isn't a product, it's a process. An ongoing process for programs. The children in the programs are always changing. The families, their needs are changing. So it has to be this process. But the programs that have a strong, clear vision for what they want for children are going to be more successful. A lot of programs don't have a clearly articulated vision for what they want for the children and the families or the teachers in their program. And that actually is a really important place to start, because
mm-hmm.
if they don't have a roadmap for where they want to go, it's like herding cats.
Yes, yes. And that actually would bring back the way that we work with administration in terms of modeling and facilitating them to mm-hmm. also have and use a reflection inquiry mental model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more that we help them do that, then they are probably more set up in that regard than to turn and interact with their staff
mm-hmm.
in that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's the same process as what we try to do with our coaches. You know, in our own professional development, we try to have the parallel process where we are practicing and walking together with them so that they understand what coaching is like, what it feels like. So when they go out there and they do their own coaching, they are much more, aligned with the experience. And so the same thing goes for the administrators. If they themselves are being coached and understand the dynamic of that and the change process and what it takes, then the idea is that they will also be, you know, very receptive and open to their staff.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you, because when you started, your team were actually assessors, and you helped them become coaches. Was that a particularly something you had to go through in mindfulness and making that shift with your team?
I'd say that, yeah. That, I mean, that's a pretty big. The two skill sets are pretty different. One is sort of a technical. The assessment process is a very technical and more clinical process. You know, using the scales, whereas coaching is a much more sort of human relationship-based process and model. So it definitely is a transition, and I would say that, you know, everybody's on their curve. We're kind of excited for the next wave of the process of our project, where we get to sort of reconceptualize the assessment and the coaching as different projects, because I think that not everybody enjoys both in the same way. I think that people feel more aligned to the assessment or the coaching, typically, one or the other. Some people are very flexible and adept at both, but that's kind of a rare breed.
I will say that the assessors, you know, had such a strong, had strong interpersonal skills and have strong observation skills and were used to working within a strength-based model, because the assessment process we have here in San Francisco is and was very strength-based. So they already came with some very strong skills that were very well developed. So then when we did get coaching, a lot of coaching training from you very frequently and very intensely, I think it was a natural fit for the skill set that they had already developed.
Yeah, the observation part in particular is really useful in the coaching. Very helpful.
And your team really, it was one of the unique things that I thought about your team working with them, is they made that transition. And I know a lot of programs where I'm not sure that transition is going as smoothly, but I have a feeling some of what's making that go smoothly is your very hands-on, frequent, careful holding and the professional development you provide, but also you are doing the parallel process of you coaching them, not just telling them what they need to do. And I think the fact that you are reflecting the walk your talk in the parallel process of modeling the reflective process is why your team has made that transition as well as they have.
And I also think that a large part of the reason most of our team, I mean, almost everybody on the team has a master's degree in early childhood or very closely related field. People are committed and interested in seeing and helping this field grow, and everybody is very committed to helping the field provide the best possible quality for care for children. So I think that's part of the motivation of our team, too. I think that they all came with that goal and hope. That's why they became assessors, because that was one way of supporting the field, and the coaching has just allowed this other part of a skill set to bloom.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's very true. Yeah, you have a unique team, I would say. One of the things I wanted to ask was, you know, you mentioned this already about the scores focus being problematic, and I feel like this is something that is endemic in our field. And if one of the things we can do in our show today is to kind of toss some conversations out into the field with our listeners, for these are some of the things we know our whole field is dealing with. And one of them has to do with the criteria for success and how are we measuring, is coaching successful, and how are we measuring quality? And I wanted to know, you both have so much to say about that, if you would say a little bit more about that, and what are your thoughts about how our field can be more intentional to make this a meaningful and relevant process?
Well, I think, I mean, there's a lot in there, which is sort of, I would say that in the short term, like some of the ways we know that our coaching is successful right now is that a lot of the coaches, we do surveys at the end of each year, asking them to sort of talk about some of the changes they've made, what value they, you know, how sort of what they've gotten out of it, and we have a lot of examples of people saying very concrete things such as, I used to tell children to stop crying. Now I understand that they need support, and I, you know, work with them differently. You know, I mean, very, very concrete things about how people have changed their practice. And generally, people report feeling more committed to the field. They feel more supported, less stressed. So these are all sort of the impacts on the individual level. I think for the future, one of the things we're hoping to do is we're planning to sort of evolve our program to be an ongoing action research model where we're constantly collecting data about our own process and sort of engaging in our own cycle of inquiry about how we know coaching is having an impact, and to talk about the other part of that is collecting what coaching can affect and what coaching can help programs improve with, and what coaching really doesn't, and what are the other needs in the field. For me, one of the things that I care so deeply about is making sure that it's visible to understand that not every coaching can't solve the problem about whether or not a teacher has planning time necessarily. Right. We can support a director and hope they can do it, but maybe economically that program can't afford it. That's a structural issue that has to do with the pay and the way our field is funded. And part of the hope of creating this action research model is that we can both have this cycle of inquiry to know about our own, to capture our own data about whether or not it's moving and what is changing, but also a place to hold some of these other more structural issues that are huge barriers so that we can use that in advocacy to sort of say coaching would be more effective if reimbursement rates were doubled, you know, where programs could actually afford paid planning times or subs so that people aren't on the floor 40 hours a week for the entire time, but instead maybe had 5 hours a week to plan and to meet as a team and to do all these other things. So there's some things that are structural that have to do with the sort of inequity in the context of our field that we'd like to be able to capture, but then we are also very curious about whether or not we're being effective and whether or not we're really helping people grow in this empowering way. And I think that's part of it that's really important to us as a, philosophically, is that this is about helping teachers engage their own voice and see themselves as professional. We're trying to sort of set a high standard for this sort of inquiry model and model it and, walk, like you say, walk the talk. So that's sort of where we're coming from. And in defining it, and notice I didn't say the word score in here at all, because scores are tool, they're evidence, they're benchmarks of change and growth, but they're not goals. They're just indicators of what has changed. And so we're trying to really keep the tools as snapshots along the path, but the goal is to have teachers who are engaged in their own learning and in their teaching process, and engaged in figuring out what the children need and asking what the, you know, and being really engaged with the children and families. That is the goal, and we're lucky in our state where we have our Department of Education has created some pretty sophisticated and broad competencies for the field. So we'll be capturing our data about coaching within the sort of framework of the coaching competencies that the Department of Ed has put out.
Yes. Well, one of the things you just mentioned, Gretchen, I think, which is interesting, is actually in a really good coaching program, coaching would actually reveal where structural or field endemic issues are needing attention. So in one way, you know, you could look at it, somebody who doesn't understand our field could look at, well, coaching didn't make a difference. We're really, where training in a traditional or technical assistance might not reveal the systemic organizational barriers you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, only getting into it in a coaching matter is actually going to reveal the issues in our field that are requiring a next level of attention. So in that regard, coaching is actually going to get at it, revealing it faster.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. And that's the other part is that, we, you know, that's why we want to create our project in a way that that captures that in the systemically or systematically rather, so that we have that information, because, you know, for example, just looking at whether or not scores change as a measure of coaching success is not necessarily, those don't necessarily connect. If there are structural issues in the program that prevent them from being able to move forward in quality, the score doesn't tell a story in the same way that the coaching
does. I love the way you frame that, that the scores are not the goal, they're the indicators. And, you know, I'm hoping our listeners take that in, because I think there are many programs where they really do think an increase in the score is the goal.
Yeah,
so, go ahead.
No, I agree with you, and I think that that's one of the important issues for me personally. You know, I think that we really need to sort of, as a field, especially those of us in the professional development world of early childhood, need to really understand that, you know, we're working with an oppressed workforce, people who have been sort of systemically and over long term through economic and racial and ethnic means been very marginalized. And to me, working with teachers who the scoring culture and the high stakes nature of tying funding to scores has this sort of poisoning effect on a group of people who are already primarily women, who are already really marginalized. And so we end up sort of blaming them for poor quality, when in reality they've never been supported to do anything differently. And so we're trying to sort of flip that and sort of say, okay, what if we know what best practices in teaching are, which is this inquiry cycle, how do we build toward what we want? And scores are very useful tools, like assessment tools, assessment class, the ITERS, the Eckers, Feckers, and the administration skills. There are a lot of them that have very, very relevant roles in this work, because it does help measure success, and it also helps know where to start with some programs. But we can't penalize the teachers who make minimum wage who haven't been, you know, the professional development systems and the education system in this country has largely failed them. There aren't that many programs that teach early childhood. There's a lot of systemic issues there. So we can't blame the teachers for not providing what we call quality. So we have to start bringing models to help engage them in the way that we want them to engage with children. So, I mean, to me, it seems like we're trying to align toward what we really want for children to what we want for children and then how we behave as coaches. That sort of brings some alignment there.
You know, yes, and in the coaches that I've worked with around the country, one of the big things is so many of us in our childhood extend a great deal of acceptance for children and their developmental process. And for some of us who are working with coaches, who are supporting teachers, helping those coaches have a sensitivity and acceptance, not having the they should know better, because as you say, this is such a deep endemic issue in our field, and that, you know, a coach might know that, but the practical teacher in the classroom may or may not, and to really modify our acceptance and judgment, and that's a big journey in preparing coaches.
It really is, and I think that coaches who have been teachers in early childhood have a different empathy and an understanding than people who have not been in the classroom, especially in poor communities. If you've worked in very poor programs and programs where, you know, it really changes your understanding of what the needs are, I think, in the field, the reality is.
And I do think that for our coaches who've been doing this, we have a very stable staff for up to 5 years, they have seen a lot of success. You know, we have a lot of data and a lot of proof that coaches are doing better than they were before we worked with them. And I think that helps our coaches know, keep the eye on the big picture and know that, okay, maybe change takes a long time and the site is moving slower than one would hope, but it's moving. Things are happening. And the whole point is to get people engaged and thinking and kind of committed to their job and what they're doing, because they're working so hard. And when someone comes in, a coach who's so supportive and strength-based and really acknowledging the teacher, the coachee, the family child care provider, it makes all the difference. It shifts that coachee's thinking right away into, oh, okay, let's do this together. And it really makes a difference. And our coaches have had the experience of seeing very different sites, you know, have success and see the long-term change. And, you know, we're seeing it still. So we have, I don't think there's a program we worked with that didn't experience positive growth.
And the key to part of that is the sustaining, though, part of it is the hardest part. And knowing, like, I think that the reason this sort of coaching intervention, I think, needs to take a long time is that it's one thing to change practice for a day or two, and it's very easy to just sort of go back to the way it was, you know, sort of the path of least resistance. But I think really being able to stick with programs and sort of mark small improvements and work over time so that the change can be sustained, because we've definitely found in a lot of programs we work with, we can go in and work for, you know, a year and then leave, and then within a couple months, it's back to exactly how it was before. So it really needs to be a supportive, and as sort of Jim Knight says in his book about instructional coaching, is the maintenance phase is probably the most important one. Once people have made change, they need to be comfortable with it. They need to own it. It can't just be, I did this because someone came in and told me to do it this way, so I did it for a month.
Well, and just like children, they need time to practice and practice and practice and refine, and have someone there who's supporting them through that practice and until it becomes a part of your own style. And that's what we need to do more.
Yeah. And internalizing it, because then it starts to actually impact their beliefs and their values, not just what they do. You know, and that's a way deeper cut of, you know, somebody doing something because it's a good thing and somebody understanding that this actually adds value to the children and the families they work with and for them to see it in themselves.
And we did a lot of research and reading about change theory. And you definitely, you know, if you're hiring coaches, it's really good to steep them in the knowledge of adult learning theory as well as change theory. Because if you don't understand those it's going to be a lot harder for you to be sensitive to the coaches you're working with.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we could probably go on and talk for another hour. It's been wonderful having both of you. And thank you so much for bringing your, you know, your experience, really clear communication about it. And because part of the coaching connections and this show is to throw the ball out into the field, is there a conversation that you would like to hear our field have more of? And what would that conversation be?
I would love to have this conversation with a whole lot more people in a much broader forum. I think that for me, you know, early childhood education to me, I really see as a social justice issue. And I think that we need to be creating models that hold equity for the teachers, the families, and educators at the center. And building out from that. And I think that there are a lot of people engaging in this kind of work around the country. I feel like coaching is definitely sort of an emerging model, and I would love for just this conversation to keep continuing. One thing I'm concerned about is a lot of things called coaching really are just about telling people what to do differently, which is not how we define coaching. So I think an open conversation about how to really define coaching, what makes coaching different from training and technical assistance, and that issue I think needs to be sort of considered, because what we say is coaching is a very different sort of equity-based partnership approach that is not the same as an expert coming in and telling someone how to do something differently. And
right.
I think that, you know, more conversations about that, because the word coaching is being thrown around an awful lot, and I don't think it's really clearly defined, and I don't think it means the same thing to everybody.
Great. Well, I think I agree with you, and I look forward to finding more guests and having more conversations about that. Barbara, is there any conversation you'd like to throw out there and hear more about?
Well, Gretchen and I are on the same page in terms of our question that she just framed. I think along with that, I would just keep adding, how is this good for children?
Yeah.
Because what we want to see is resources being spent responsibly and have it be effective and have coaches feel competent and confident in what they're doing, and with the bottom line being, how is this helpful to kids? And I think that sometimes we get very caught up in the, you know, and what we're doing or who's doing what, and we sometimes just forget that this is really about the children, and I want to keep the focus on them and their long-term success.
Thank you. Well, thank you both for your passion and your commitment and, you know, the wonderful work that you're doing in bringing thoughtfulness to our field, and thank you for being with us today and sharing.
And thank you for having us on.
Yep.
We're honored.
My pleasure. Well, we hope you all enjoyed the show today, and we really would love to hear what's on your mind. What are the topics you'd like to hear about and conversations you'd like us to continue out there? And please, you can contact us through our website. It's www.constanthine.com. And we'd love to hear if you know of other leaders and thoughtful practitioners in the field who you think would also offer something. And thanks very much for taking the time to join us today or listening to us later. Thanks very much for being with us for our first Coaching Connections, and we'll look forward to having you next show. Thanks, Gretchen. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.